Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes, reporting for duty. It's Thursday, January 20th. Of course, we're heading right into UFC 270 on Saturday. And first things first, reminder for Saturday, we have a watch-along. It's called the UFC 270 Watch-Along on MMA Junkie with our partners Tipico, USA Today Sports, and Panda. It's going to be a great time. If you hung out for UFC 269, then you know what I'm talking about because of the action delivered. And of course, Ghost and I, we deliver too. So join up with us. Have fun. Even if you ordered the pay-per-view, watch it along with us. You know what I mean? There's times where you just had enough of DC, Rogan, and Anik. All respect to them, but come on, 8 hours of those guys, turn them down, hang out with us. And if you don't get the pay-per-view, then yes, let us be your eyes and ears. 8 p.m. Eastern for the watch-along. Immediately after us, there is a post-fight show, and I've been told there will be pre-fight content, more than likely 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, not interfering with your ability to watch fights, but it's not in cement yet, so just keep an eye on that on MMA Junkie. Of course, we'll address it on our social media. I'm at MMA Junkie George, Goes is at The Goes, and we're going to start the show, and we're going to definitely start talking about these great fights coming up and all the latest news in MMA. Well, Goes, I know we've been talking till we're blue in the face about this Gon and Ngannou matchup for the unification of the UFC heavyweight title. Ngannou's the undisputed champion. Gon is the interim champion. It's so silly, too, that this is for a title unification. The man was healthy. It was all because they couldn't agree on whether he should fight in August or September. But here we are. However, Ngannou has said he knocked out Gon in practice. He kind of revealed something there. Two things I want to hear from you. A, does this fall under, hey, you're not really supposed to talk about what happens in practice? Or are all bets off because, you know, a little video's been released here and there. They've been chirping. It's for big stakes. Maybe we just let them have their moment. And the other part I want to know is, does that in any way kind of sway you? Because that's all we've been talking about. If big man gets his mitts on the other big man, homeboy could fall. But we haven't really seen Ciryl Gane fall, you know. So a lot of us say, well, he's got good, tight defense. You know, can he let Ngannou penetrate, you know, through his force shield? What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it didn't surprise me. Actually, what he said surprised me, but it – when you look at Francis Ngannou, I mean, like, we don't have much to go on other than when he walked down that corridor and just kind of ignored him. If you listen to Eric Nixick, I mean, he's very political. You know, he doesn't say much. Francis's coach had a lot to say, I thought. And I think maybe their team just had enough, you know, and Francis said, you know what, I'm going to let this out. But I don't know that it's enough. And even going back to Gon's initial comments, I don't know that that's enough for me to say, oh, this guy's got that guy's number. Because we've just seen in the short time that we've had Francis Ngannou in our world, he's improved a lot, right? If you go back to his early fights, and with each fight, it seems like he's giving a big improvement. So it's really hard to say that that has any value. But I don't blame him for doing it. Because once Gon did that, it's like, all right, well, that code's kind of out the window.
Yeah. Does it change? I mean, I want to also clarify, it was a high kick that he got him with. It was in sparring, and it wasn't like they were taping up their hands, getting ready, like, I'm going to fuck this guy. It wasn't anything like that. It was two guys that got along back then. They were training partners at the MMA factory in Paris. It was a high kick that got through. But it's still a strike. Does that in any way change? Because we've all been flip-flopping, not only on this one, but the co-main event. Figueiredo one day, well, maybe Moreno gets some, you know, and then Same thing with Gunn and Ngannou back and forth. Did that sway you in any bit? Because that's kind of a little bit of a possible mental advantage, you know, going in.
Yeah, no, not at all. It really hasn't. I mean, in the times that we've been in gyms, we've seen plenty of fighters go at each other. Same combinations, different days. And some days one guy gets the best of the other one. So it's, no, that doesn't really sway me too much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there's all kinds of footage, video footage of the press conference that they had with the fighters out in Anaheim, California. And if you want to check it out, go to your YouTube page, youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. A lot of stuff is there, folks. A lot of stuff. It's all filed. You'll see it'll say UFC 270. So everything pertaining to that will be in there, including a some footage with Dana White as well, as he obviously addresses everything going on in his company and the promotion of UFC 270. And it's the same place I direct you to if you want to check out our Legend to Legend series with Burt Watson and Goes and Abby Subban. I hope I said that right. The spinning back click series that we do, rankings report when we get around to it, and we do it, that's up there as well. And the extended MMA Junkie Radio interviews, they're there as well. You'll find stuff in its entirety, like you do on this show when we have them here. And I forgot to mention, Ray Borg will join us as well. He's got a fight coming up at Eagle FC 44 against Cody Gibson. Two UFC vets going at it. Two tough guys, man. And, you know, Ray Borg hasn't done much media that I remember lately, so it'll be fun to catch up with him. Getting back to what we were saying here, yeah, it goes that little side story, you know, it's getting talked about. Yesterday, that was the focus. Of course, any other day, it seems like fighter pay and Ngannou and his contract is the focus, and not enough about these two cartoon characters that are going to meet up, you know, in the center of the octagon. Like, that really, really probably two of the most skilled heavyweights ever, and it's just not being looked at that way.
Yeah, that is kind of strange. And I'm curious to see what these pay-per-view numbers are going to do, because anytime you have the baddest man on the planet, you should get back high results. And I'm curious if raising the prices on these pay-per-views is going to affect that at all. If I don't feel like the UFC's done as much buzz for this fight as they have other fights. And I can't help but wonder if that has anything to do with Dana and Francis just aren't in a great place right now. I'm not going to say they're in a bad place, but they're not in a great place. Any of these types of fighters that have ever been in this type of position before, they've had decent relationships with Dana. This one's not going so well. I don't know. Do you have that feel? Like, I feel like there's just not a lot of buzz about it.
No, you're right. I feel the same way you do. It could be Sports better.
Center, all that stuff, you know, like we just haven't seen much.
I mean, yeah, we're literally 4 days removed, and we're still, if you put on ESPN, it's more likely that they'll be debating, did the ref run into the center and Dak Prescott and slow them down and the play didn't get off, or anything having to do with Tom Brady, versus what's going on this weekend in Anaheim. And what's going on this weekend in Anaheim, like I was giving this example on our Spinning Backlick show on Patreon. Sorry, on our Triple G show on Patreon. This is really boxing's version of Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. No disrespect to Anthony Joshua. He's part of that little trio there. He's a stud, a former champ. But at the, you know, it seemed like those two were the top two guys there, and it had a great buildup, and it delivered, man. I didn't think it was as great as everyone thought. I thought it had a lot of heart and just two tough guys, but tactics and skills wise, you know, it was a slobber knocker, you know, but it was up there. It was a great heavyweight fight. And I think that's what this one could be. Now, I was reminded something, and I don't know if it was you, John Morgan from the MMA Roadshow that joined us, or Richard Hunter. And that's that Ngannou and Ciryl Gane, it may be too tactical. We don't have to go too far to remember that one. You and I were in the building for Ngannou and Lewis. That mm-hmm. had all fireworks written all over it, and it was one of the worst fights of all time.
You know what? I'm actually leaning more towards it could look like that than the other way.
I'm hoping that if jinxes are right, which I really don't believe in them, but I sound stupid saying that because I knock on wood all the time. I tell people they mushed it, and So maybe I do, but maybe it's just me being a goof. But I'm hoping that if Jinx's work goes, that you just jinxed it by saying it's going to be bad, therefore it'll be good.
I hope that too.
Anyway, all right, folks. So again, let me just one more reminder. It doesn't hurt. YouTube.com/MMA Junkie Video. A lot of stuff there on our YouTube page. I mean, every day, folks. It's like going to the site and hitting refresh. There's just all kinds of content there. Who doesn't love them? Some video, right? All right. Mm-hmm. Another reminder, UFC 270 watch along on Saturday. Goes and I back in the studio, and we are going to be watching some fights along with you at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Immediately afterwards, do not leave your seat, you know, and go to bed or anything like that. Hang out with John Morgan as he does the UFC 270 post-fight show. He will be commentating on the fights that take place and, of course, in real time, kind of watching the all the post-fight coverage that's going down, you know, the interviews and the press conference, so he can hang out with you and unpack it all. Everybody's going to take a deep breath. I'll be watching it to see, because that's when we find out the bonuses, who got transported to the hospital, anything in the back, any three pieces in the soda go down in the back, things like that. So it's going to be a great time. And we are, in fact, going to have pre-fight coverage. It's just that as of this taping this morning, we still weren't sure of the time. It's looking more like 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, but I really couldn't lock in a time. So just kind of keep an eye on MMA Junkie socials for that. All right, goes Tijuana or Manaus. That's, I believe, where Figueiredo's from. Which city is going to be welcoming home a fighter with music and a mini carnival and, you know, all the festivities?
I am going to go with my head and not my heart. I'm going to say Manaus. Yeah. I feel like we just didn't get a really good representation of Davidson Figueiredo in that last fight. And everything that I've seen to this moment seems really good. So I'm going to lean closer to their first fight and say it's going to look more like that. You?
I think Figueiredo's grappling is way more impressive than people think. And even though Moreno subbed Figueiredo, I believe Figueiredo had a little bit of what Amanda Nunes had, and that was a meltdown. His was more of a mini meltdown. I think Amanda's was a complete meltdown. And in that meltdown, there was a component of a pie where you could just see he didn't train, she didn't train, he's tired, she's tired, and they just quit. They had no heart, no will, you know, which in a way is kind of bizarre because they're both pretty great. Like Amanda was 13-1 in the UFC. She only lost to Kat Zingano, and she beat up a lot of really good fighters. But in this fight, it just seemed to me like someone who didn't get out of bed. She slept in those silk sheets and watched TV, and I don't know. I was fooled. She looked good. She had her abs and everything when she weighed in at 135. I just thought, oh, she's going to scorch Juliana. Juliana better get this fight to the ground quickly. And that didn't happen. In the Davidson Figueiredo against Brandon Moreno fight, he didn't look like he did in the other fights that I've seen him. You know, again, even though he got submitted, he's pretty tough on the ground, man. When he locks you down, he can hold you down, win rounds, or really threaten with a submission. He's got that power in his hands. Brandon has taken his best shot. And maybe that's why Brandon was confident going into fight two. He had this look like, no, I got this. And I remember thinking, geez, I don't want to be too rude here, man, but that first fight, he hurt you bad. And you hurt him, but not bad. Yours was more like cumulative. His was more of a threat, like you could go at any minute. But, man, Brandon had that. He had the confidence, and he came through. And that's what makes it so tough for me to go, Figueiredo, like I literally in a high voice is how I'm telling you who I think's gonna win the fight. And you know me, I love to go with the underdog. I can't believe he's the underdog. I should say I can't believe he's that big of an underdog. But man, goes come Saturday night, you know I do have some Modelos for us, mm-hmm. And the fights are in Southern California, and there's gonna be a lot of retweeting, and you know there's gonna be a lot of Tricolor in the house, and I don't know, man. At the last minute, I might go. I'm going with Moreno. Who has a problem with that? Ike, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. But you'll be rooting for him. I don't know that you'll be picking him, right?
Well, I picked them in the staff picks, and I've gone back and forth. You know, I mean, look, Marino. I will say this on behalf of Marino. Figueredo wasn't prepared for fight two because he was a fat cat. By that, I mean, of course, not like obese. What I mean is he, I think, lived the life of a champion. So he didn't give it his all. Whereas Marino, he's kind of fat catting. You know, he's, you could tell, getting to know the president, doing all kinds of media, a lot of, it seemed like he did a lot of public appearances. But it also looked like he put in the work.
Yeah.
To me, he kind of looked like somebody who was exhausted. And that's why when we talked to him, he just looked like, man, guys, I needed to shut everything down. Because he probably realized I can't burn the candle everywhere. You know, even if you look at Embedded, he took the time to do his daughter's birthday because he knew he couldn't do the birthday and he didn't want to miss those moments. But see, all that, man, it kind of all adds up. But he got it out of the way. And if he can get some good rest and his weight's on point, then maybe all that is left behind. But it really did look like if they asked him to do 60 training sessions for this camp for Figueredo, he got at least 55 of those done. In the leading up to the first fight, if they asked Figueredo to do 60 training sessions, it looked like he maybe got to 40 of them. Like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can agree with that. It's a lot of responsibility, but the way Brandon is, I bet you, you're right. Maybe instead of doing 100%, he did 95. But I'm sure he fought for those 95. You know what I mean? Whereas where other fighters, I think their trainers, their managers are telling them, please just give us 95. I think he was trying to get 100 and said, all right, I'll take 95. Like, that dude does train his ass off. But I'm thinking more like emotionally. I think he's going to be in a rough spot in this one.
Yeah. All right. Let me go back to the heavyweight division. Maybe I should have done this before going to the flyweights. But did you also see that Dana White isn't confident about Jones fighting Ngannou Gone winner?
Mm-hmm.
If you read that headline and you're a casual fan, you're like, well, what the hell's been going on the last 2 years? This guy hasn't fought. He relinquished his title because that's what he wanted to do. And now there's uncertainty from the most powerful man in the company that might not happen. Relax, casuals, is what I'm here to say. I just think they still haven't met terms on the money. I don't think Jones in any way took on this endeavor and thought it all comes down to me watching them fight. And then there's something I'm going to witness on Saturday night that's going to go, oh, I don't want anything to do with that. I'm going back to 12. No, I don't think it's anything to do with that. I think he knows that he has a shot to beat both guys. It'll be via dismantling them, not, you know, thumping Gon or Ngannou, whoever the winner may be. I just think it basically boils down to finances. That's his way of saying, you know, well, we haven't agreed yet or whatever. And I keep thinking, Dana White's not afraid to ruffle feathers. Again, why doesn't he just say that? Just be open about it instead of sending everyone on a goose chase, making him eat his words, and then him getting pissed at the media for doing it. Why not just say, just like we hear in other sports, you know what? We haven't been able to come to terms. But I'm anxious to see the fight, and I really hope we can come to terms and make this fight happen.
I think a lot of it has to do with the winner of the fight. Francis Ngannou versus John Jones, that's a barn burner.
It's a stadium fight.
Yeah, it's a stadium fight. Money's going to dictate location as well. But Cyril Gane versus John Jones kind of feels like when Israel Adesanya fought Jan Blachowicz. All right, I'll tune in, but I don't know that this has proven anything. You know, like, it just doesn't have the same pop as Ngannou and Jones. So I think a lot of it has to do with who wins. But you're right. Yeah, at the end of the day, it comes down to money.
Yeah. I still kind of laugh at that old, do you think these fighters want you to know how much they make? And then all of a sudden their friends and family are asking for loans. Come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, NBA is like that, the off season, you know, like Dennis Schroeder, our point guard for the Lakers, turned down a 4-year, $88 million contract. He's looking for 120 over 5 years, blah, 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 you know, and the Lakers don't want to meet it. And then you know what the Lakers salary cap is and what they can work with. But those numbers get thrown all around. It's not like Dennis Schroeder is late to games and the coach says, well, why were you late? And he goes, man, I had these cousins over at the house and they were tripping. They want to start a barbershop and they wanted me to fund them alone. You know, come on, man. These are grown men and women. They ain't going to have those problems. And he keeps throwing that fucking corny carnival line that so many people consume and just go, oh, is that it? Okay. You know, and then they run to their blogs and say, that ain't it. They just don't want to pay as much. However, this is where I come to the UFC's defense. And that's the fact that embarrassingly, they don't need these fighters individually. As an individual, they don't need them for the company's success. They love to have them because they love promoting them and they love telling people they have all the best fighters. But that's the problem. They're almost too good for their own being. And you know, it's not a bad problem to have, I guess. Your company just makes a ton of money whether your best employees show up or not.
You know what? I used to fly the they don't need them flag with pride. But I was thinking about this the other day. It maybe hasn't happened yet, but I think it's going to start going that way where they can't play that game no more. Because too many superstars are gone or on their way out. And I don't know that they've been able to replace them the way they have at the pace that they have in years past. So Surreal Gone is relatively a new name, right? But does he interest you the way Francis Ngannou does? No.
No.
Right? Nate Diaz is kind of on his way out.
Unless he jacks up Ngannou on Saturday with a one-punch KO, then we're all going to go, God damn, Smokey style from Friday.
Right, but there are a lot of guys that are somewhat on their way out. Look at Jorge Masvidal and Colby Covington. One of those guys, you're really not going to care that much about after that fight, right? Those guys are kind of on their way out. Kamaru Usman's just dominant, you know? I don't know that I'm telling people, hey, stop what you're doing. Come watch Kamaru Usman. Great guy, great fighter. But I don't know that he gives that same kind of vibe that a Conor McGregor, a Nate Diaz, even a Jorge Masvidal, he doesn't give off that type of vibe. Alexander Volkanovski's kind of a nice guy. He can be funny at times, but doesn't really give off that vibe either. Peter Yan, I don't know. So, I think they're going to get to the point where they do need some of these characters. They do need to say, hey, twice a year, you get to see John Jones. It hasn't happened just yet, but they can't be fucking around because I think it's right around the corner.
I see that. I see that as well. I was going over the list in my head as you were talking. Cejudo, Habib. Jones has kind of just been out for 2 years.
Bisping Cormier.
Yeah, there's been a lot of Felder. He's kind of gone. A lot of fighters that were either top of the notch, top of the food chain, superstars, pay-per-view sellers, or just names that you could revolve around a fight night. You know, when you get to a fight night and it's got your name on the poster, that means you've sort of arrived. And a lot of them are kind of gone. Junior Dos Santos, Alistair Overeem, you know, even though they weren't competing for a title, you could still go, no way, Surreal Gone's fighting Alistair Overeem because that was Overeem putting him over. Or JDS is going to fight Curtis Blaydes, you know, whatever. A lot of those names are disappearing faster than they're making the stars. I would agree with that. And here's another thing that occurred to me, goes, this might be a reach, but I'm going to have to unpack it. How about the fact that this generation, what do they call now? Z or something like that? Millennials? I don't know.
I think they're millennials, right?
I think it went X, Y, millennial, Z, something like that. They are so introverted, and a lot of them are now 2 years of their lives have been taken away through this pandemic, that I think a lot of people are going to grow up with less personality than previous, you know, generations. And that not just goes for sports. It goes for movie stars and things. Like, I think you're gonna see a lot of people that rise to success, but aren't gonna have much personality and charm, you know. And honestly, I think the people from the 60s and 70s could almost say that to the 80s. It's almost like a little bit is lost along the way because cancel culture, the pandemic, the phones that everyone's got their faces buried in. There's just a lack of communication, and so therefore, that's why I think you also have a lot of people that just don't pop.
Yeah, no, I actually think social media has a lot to do with it because the way you act behind your phone and your keyboard is way different than the way you act in person. So I think what ends up happening, and I've said this about like online dating, is when you get somebody on an online date, they sort of don't know how to act because they haven't had those reps. They haven't had the rep of being at a concert, seeing a pretty girl, walking over. Hey, what's your name? I'm this guy. This is what I do. They haven't done that. It's just easy to go, nope, yes, nope, yes, swipe left, right. That's a lot easier. You don't get those reps. So in person, when you're meeting these people, I don't even know that your personality, I don't even know that you know who you are, right? Because you just don't get out there and hang out with people. Instead, you're playing video games and talking to them on your game chat or whatever. Like, it's just different. I think that process has already started, and I think the pandemic is probably making it even worse. So, yeah, I think a lot of people are going to have a big difficulty dealing with letdowns, and they're just going to be strange, man.
So, get this. I was thinking of Sean O'Malley for two reasons. One, because I don't mean to shit on the guy. For one, I think he's a good fighter. I really enjoy watching his fights. People are gravitate to him, and I do think he has some personality. He talks enough crap, but then he also keeps it real. So to me, he comes off kind of someone that's really not trying to be anything, you know, like he knows when to like step on the gas and when to let off. And I kind of like that. But my other point is there may be an MMA, a point in time where you may see companies do what they did with Sean O'Malley and AJ McKee, and that's protect them. And that comes from the world of boxing and not just throw them to the fire. Like, on the one hand, you want to know, does this person got it or not? If they do, at 10-0 and they're a star, great. But maybe if we guide them all the way to 15-0, it may be greater. It's just, you know, we're all so impatient. We all want to see them fight right now. Who knows? Anyway, that could be an entire subject for a future podcast. And we got Ray Borg coming up. So why don't we talk to the former UFC flyweight and bantamweight, because he missed weight a couple times. And then we'll come back and wrap up the show. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Gozer back. We got the Taz Mexican Devil with us. Ray Borg's been a minute since we talked to him. He's going to be facing Cody Gibson at EFC. That's Eagle FC 44 on January 28th. Don't forget you can watch the fights live and free on FLX Cast. For more information on that, go to EagleFC.com. Follow the links. What's up, Ray? How you doing?
Good, man. How you guys doing? It's been a while. It's been a long time.
It has been, man. First of all, you know, since we got to know you and your family very well, can you update us on your son? How's your son doing?
Oh man, he's doing fantastic. He's 3 years surgery free, so he hasn't had any surgeries in 3 years, which is great because, you know, with his condition being lifelong, the longer he can go without a surgery, the more likely it is that he won't possibly ever need a surgery because, you know, he has a shunt in his head, and ultimately the long term goal is for that shunt to work, you know, his entire life. But you know, with like the 50-50 success rate of shunts, you know, it could be tough at times. So, you know, the fact that he's gone 3 years without a surgery is really big for myself and my family, as far as, you know, hoping that he'll never have to have a surgery again. You know, he's in school and he's doing great, man. He's a fun kid.
God bless you and your family and your son. Also, another thing that I always enjoyed talking to you about, not because I've ever really done it, but archery. You got really into it. Are you still into it? Is it a hobby, a second sport? You know, Ben Askren, for example, used to just tell us, oh, yeah, I like the Frisbee golf. Next thing we know, he actually was a professional level at it, you know. How about you, Ray? How good have you gotten? You stuck with it?
Yeah, you know, so what's crazy is, like, archery, so bow hunting has been, hunting in general has been a part of my family for an extremely, since I was a kid. I've been hunting since I was a little kid. And bow hunting has always been very, very big in my family. And then, you know, as I got older, you know, me and my brother and my cousin, we started doing more competitions, like, you know, 3D shoots and, you know, a little bit of target shooting and things like that. So, you know, I don't do as much 3D shoots as much as I don't do as much 3D shooting anymore. But I, you know, archery is always a big part of my family. It's always kind of one of those things that's always going to be there. So, you know, I still bow hunt. I still always have my bow. You know, I shoot for, I shoot a great bow. I shoot an elite bow. So, yeah, you know, it's one of those things that's never gonna phase out of my life.
Oh, I didn't know it had deep roots in your family. All right. And if you don't mind, just cause I don't have time to look it up, we're interviewing you right now. Just the difference between archery and bow hunting.
You know, so, you know, I guess, like, a good way to gauge it is, like, you first start off with archery. You got to pick up a bow, you got to find a bow, and you got to find the right bow for you, you know, the right fit, and then just get shooting, man. Just get shooting, get on that target, get on that range, and then, you know, and then eventually you can start putting in for hunts, you can start going out on hunts, and then, you know, you get your first kill and you're a bow hunter.
Got it. All right. I really do find it interesting, man. All right, so now your name's popped up on our radar. You know, you are fighting for Eagle FC. This will be a bantamweight fight against another former UFC vet like yourself, Cody Gibson. Talk to us about this. How's your life been outside of the UFC? I know you scooped up a win last year in the UAE, if I'm not mistaken. What's the world like now, I guess, after such a long career with the UFC?
You know, so this is, like, the first interview I've actually done really since I've been cut. I think I've done, like, one interview maybe, but I kind of cut all that out of my life. Like, I told myself, like, you know, I didn't want to be a dick and stop doing interviews, but I wanted to, you know, I had a lot to focus on mentally. You know, I actually was, like, before my UAE, like, a few months before my UAE fight, before I really got focused for that fight, I was kind of in, like, I guess a bad spot in my own head. And what I mean by that is I grew up in the UFC. You know, I did, you know, things that, you know, many people can't say that they've done. I was in the UFC from the time I was 20 years old to the time I was 27 years old. And not, you know, that's a long time. And I grew up inside that octagon and I learned a lot, but I was, when I got cut, I was really bitter. I was really, really bitter about it, especially because I think anybody in the flyweight division I beat. I think I smoke everybody in the flyweight division. You know, my coaches know that. A lot of people know that. And then even the bantamweight division. Look at Ricky Simone. You know, we fought to a really close split decision, and he's over here just knocking dudes out. And, you know, it just goes to show that I'm one of the best in the world. So I was bitter about it, and it became really unhealthy because it at the end of the day, it was my own fault. You know, I had too many hiccups. I had too many missed weights. I had all that going on, and it was ultimately my own fault. And, like, I think maybe that's why I got so bitter, is because deep down I knew it was my own fault, and it was, like, taken from me because of my own, you know, shenanigans. But from the time I got over it, but from the time I let go, because I was having a hard time letting go, I was like, you know what, I should be there. You know, these dudes aren't on my level. I should be there. I should be there. And then I finally let it go. And then when I finally let it go is when I was able to mentally accelerate. And what I mean by that is I cut out all the bull crap out of my life that was distracting me. You know, I had a lot of, like, outside distractions, you know, that, you know, they were my, like self-induced distractions, you know, but I got rid of all my distractions. I cleaned up my dieting. I cleaned up my life. You know, I've never looked this good at 35 ever. And, you know, I've only looked this good at 25, which is crazy. So, you know, it was a lot of changes in my life, a lot of mental changes in my life. And then I finally let go of it all. And I said, you know what, I could sit here and, you know, drown in my own sorrows about not being in the UFC, or I can go and I can do what I'm really good at, which is getting through shit, tackling, you know, obstacles and showing that I belong in those big shows. And I belong competing with some of the best in the world. And ultimately, honestly, it's not necessarily about getting back in the UFC, you know, although that's the ultimate goal for everybody. It's about beating the best that there is, you know? Like, you can go fight in, like, a tiny organization, you know, in the middle of nowhere. But if you're going to fight the best in the world and beat them, then you're the best in the world. And that's always what the goal was, and I got distracted from that. So I managed to collect myself, stop drowning in my own sorrow, stop feeling sorry for myself, and I got it together. And I considering how that trip to UAE went, I thought I looked pretty good. And honestly, I felt like I could have finished that dude. But, you know, with the way that week went, it was tough. So, you know, I was happy that I even won the fight, honestly, because that week was really tough out there.
You know, it had been a while since we interviewed you, so I had to go over your resume and remind myself, because you were very busy up until 2017, and then after that, you'd either fight once or twice a year, and we just hadn't really connected. Like you said, you didn't do as much media, but one thing that still always stood out to me was 5 rounds with Demetrius Johnson, almost 5 rounds. You know, not a lot of people could say that. I always knew you had the talent, but back then we used to say, well, you're still young. You still got to get a little bit more experience, and you'll still have another run in you, and I'm wondering if this is kind of what you feel like. You know, you have gained a lot of experience lifelong and competition wise but you're still only 28. You know what I mean? Like, luckily you do have some time and you have figured out these distractions. You know, I guess that was one of the benefits of starting out early.
Yeah, you know, I've definitely grown up a lot, like a lot. It's crazy. Like, it's crazy to feel that transition from being an up-and-comer to becoming a veteran. Because even though I am 28, you know, a buddy of mine, you know, pointed out to me, he's like, dude, you're a veteran in the sport. And I was like, no, yeah, you know what? You're kind of right. And a lot of that has to do with, like, someone told me the other day, they're like, oh, did you hear that? You know, I don't know where they saw it at, but they're like, you know, that, like, the UFC was considering signing back Cody Gibson if he beats you. And I, instead of being like, well, I guess I better beat him, and, like, getting, like, all in my own head, I was like, so? I mean, I don't give a damn, you know? And I think that's where the experience comes in, that it's about the fight ahead. You know, it's not about, you know, you always want to be looking into the future, and it's always important to have, you know, future goals and things like that. But it's always looking at the obstacle ahead. You know, if you overlook the obstacle ahead, then you're not going to overcome it. So, you know, it's a lot of experience, a lot of growing. I definitely feel like one thing I never told anybody about when I fought Demetrius, only a few people know, but I was scared. I was really scared when I fought Demetrius. You know, a lot of people said I did well. I did go 5 rounds, but I still think I could have beat him based off my skill level. And I still think that I could have done a lot better in that fight, but I was scared. And what I mean by scared, I wasn't scared of DJ. I mean, if you're going to fight, if you're going to be a fighter, you can't be scared of people. That's just not how it works. But I was scared of ruining an opportunity that I got so young, because everybody knows that it's tough to get a title shot, much less get it twice. And then that day of that fight, man, I told my wife, I was like, I'm nervous. And she goes, well, that's kind of scary. I've never heard you say that before. And I was like, I know. I was like, I'm fucking nervous. And you know, I told her, I was like, I'm scared. She's like, why are you scared? I was like, well, because I'm only like 24. I'm fighting the best in the world. What if I screw it up? What if I don't go in there and I ruin something that I've worked my entire life for? Like, I have been at this game since I was 13. So that was a big learning experience, man. It was a big learning experience to believe in myself. And I definitely think if I would have believed in myself in that fight, I could have beat him.
Ray, are those the type of emotions where no matter who you talk to, whatever they say, is it something you just have to kind of experience on your own and learn on your own? Like, in other words, there's nothing that can really prepare you for that mentally?
Yeah, I strongly believe that. You know, I believe with anything, not even fighting, I believe everything is life experience. And, you know, I was actually just talking to my brother about this yesterday, that I feel like you got to go through some shit in life to be, you know, to make it, to do anything. You got to go through it, man. And I could have had some of the best, you know, pound for pound fighters in the world talking in my ear and telling me, you know, how to be in this moment. But until you actually experience that moment, you don't know what it's like. It's crazy. It's really crazy. So it took living that moment. And I wouldn't take, honestly, I think I, as crazy as it sounds, I wanted to beat DJ so bad, But I think at the end of the day, I'm more happy with losing to him than what I would have probably been winning, because I would have beat him at 24 and then nothing would have changed about myself. I would have probably got a bigger ego. And who knows where the road would have led then, you know, all, you know, who knows? I think losing to DJ could have been one of the best things in my life, because one, the biggest thing that it taught me is that there really was levels. And, you know, although I do think that skill level wise, I'm up there and things like that, at that time, he was levels above me, man. And what I mean by levels is I don't think he was better than me. I still don't think skill wise he was like crazy better than me. But his fight IQ during the fight, like, just absolutely was just crazy to me. Like, I've never been out scrambled, and I've never been like one step behind. All my fights, I'm one step ahead, one step ahead, one step ahead. And for the first time, someone was one step ahead of me, and it was like mind boggling for me. So, you know, fighting DJ made me realize that there really are levels to this, and I just wasn't on that level yet. You know, especially here, I wasn't on that level yet.
Ray, if this were the Ray Borg book, what would you call this chapter right now?
If I had to call this chapter anything, because I'm like a very blunt person, I'd call this chapter "Stop crying about shit you can't control and get over it."
There you go. Ray, look, when our audience listens to our interviews, a lot of times they hit me back, you know, once it's done, and I'm trying to think like them, right? And if it's too personal, just tell me to F off. But if you don't mind, can you just give us an example of a distraction? You said these distractions that kept you from being the best Ray Borg. Could you give us an example of a distraction if it's not too personal?
No, for sure. I'm pretty open about it, actually. My distractions were honestly like hobbies. It sounds silly, but my distractions were hobbies. And what I mean by that is I grew up broke. I grew up poor, you know? Like, I didn't have any money. I'm not going to say I lived in a shack, but you know, I grew up New Mexican, and I grew up, you know, bouncing around a lot. So when I finally started to make money in the UFC after the DJ fight, I didn't start making good money until after the DJ fight. I got a good contract after the DJ fight, and I started making good money, and I started to be able to afford to do cool shit. Like, you know, like, I was really into mountain biking. That was my biggest distraction, as I was spending crazy amounts of money on mountain bikes, and I was going on big trips all the time. But the reason why it became such a distraction is because I wouldn't show up to training. I was too busy wanting to go out and, you know, ride my bike. I wanted to go out and like camp and like do all kinds of shit like that. And that's fine. I think those things are important in fighting. You know, it keeps your mind good. Cause like, if you're fighting all day long, it's stressful on you. It really is. But I took those hobbies a little bit too far, to where instead of like saying, hey, I'm going to, you know, go for a mountain bike trip this weekend, I'll be back on Monday, you know, ready to go, it got kind of toxic to the point where I was blowing off training to go do whatever it was I was doing. And there was a point in time, like, this is the biggest thing why I feel like I'm at a different level right now, is a lot of people don't know this, but all those fights that I did great in, like with Ricky Simone, Casey Kenney, all those great fights that I had, I did that well only training when I had a fight. And then it finally, like, I had to sit down and tell myself, I was like, man, you're beating these dudes, you're competing with the top dudes in the world, and you're only training like for 6 weeks. Because like I said, I got so distracted that I would be doing all kinds of stuff, having fun, having a blast. And shit you not, when I fought Casey Kenney, I didn't train. I didn't step on the mats for about 4 months. A lot of it had to do because I was transitioning from JW to Jackson Zakima. But I was still out just having fun. So I didn't train for like close to 4 months. And then I got into Jackson Zakima. And then I started training a little bit, and then Ali offered me a fight to fight Casey Kenney. And of course, I'm not going to say no. I said yes. And then it was just, you know, it has a lot to do with my missed weight, is, you know, just not being in the gym and my weight being so heavy. And that's ultimately what started to affect me. Like, when I had a lot of bad weight cuts, it wasn't because during camp I wasn't disciplined. That's the thing about myself, is when I'm in camp, I'm disciplined. I train extremely hard. I diet well. but it was always my outside of camp consistency that killed me. Because when I wasn't in camp and I started to fall off, you know, I would drink, like, not unhealthy drink, but, you know, like, a part of being a mountain biker, it's like you go on a long ride, and then after the long ride, you and your buddies meet up at a brewery and you guys have like a social beer, right? You know, I was having a lot of social beer. I was eating a lot. You know, I was just constantly, you know, just packing on that weight because I was just having, you know, I was just having a good time. I was out with my buddies and I was out, you know, mountain biking, things like that, taking trips. And I was just eating burgers all the time. And here's what's crazy. I was talking to my strength and conditioning coach right now, because now I think I can make 25. I compete well at 35. I love how strong I am at 35. But I have to prove it. I'm not telling everybody I'm moving down to 25 because no one's going to trust that I can make 25, which is okay. It's cool. I get it. But I think I can make 25 because I walk around really light because I control what I eat now and I'm consistent in the gym. But I was talking to my strength and conditioning coach the other day, and he asked me why a lot of my cuts to 25 didn't go that well. And I said, do you want to know why? And he goes, why? I was like, because I would start my fight camps at 165 pounds. And then try to cut down to 125. And it's actually funny because Rogerio Bonturin, like, it was a pretty funny moment. Rogerio Bonturin had missed weight for a fight. And during the commentary, they were like, oh, he says he needs X amount of weeks because he starts his cut from like 165 or 162. And I was sitting there like one of those like keyboard warriors. And I was like, that's disgusting. That guy needs to get his life together and start walking around light. And then I was like, wait a second. That was me like literally like last year. So I had to like pump my brakes on that. But yeah, that was a big reason why I missed weight so many times, is because I would let my weight get so high when I wasn't getting ready for a fight. And then when I was getting ready for a fight, I was cutting weight just to cut weight. That's why a lot of my weight cuts weren't that great, because I would dehydrate myself and sit in saunas and sit in hot baths just to get to a weight that was on the number board,
yeah,
able to make weight. So I was cutting weight just to cut weight.
You know, I guess in a way you answered two questions for me, and you gave me a sigh of relief, man. I know how the 505 is, burke. You know, you can get in some stuff there, and I was really scared you might say, you know, some illegal stuff. But just knowing that it was stuff, hey, hobbies, all right, whoo, you know, for me, thinking, all right, well, that's something you can definitely turn around, and you identified how you can do that. But so in between fights, fighters get better because that's when they work on the stuff that they need to shore up or just improve on altogether. That's what you weren't doing, and at the same time, you were letting your weight go, and I guess that's something else that people have always wondered why so many of those didn't go right. But, you know, we hadn't talked to you in a while, and I didn't want to bury you with all these questions. You know, we're like, fuck, no, I'm back to not doing media. These guys are too nosy. But we wonder this stuff because we fall in love with you guys and your skills and your personalities. Everyone's different. Everyone's got a story. You know what I mean? And you've shared with us before how rough things were in your childhood and the fact that you got to turn it around. Now we cheer for you on the personal side and in the cage. Listen, let's wrap up here. Okay, so the focus is Gibson. There's no way around that. You've been clear about that. A more mature Ray Borg is sitting in front of us with goals that he wants to accomplish and everything. And in no way are you even thinking about UFC or anything. But I want to ask you this outside the question that kind of pertains to UFC. In a week, less than a week, Brandon Moreno is fighting Davison Figueiredo. Can you just look at that, at those two fights without disrespect, and just go, oh, I know I can compete with them. I'm not even asking you for a W or nothing like that, but do you know that you're now on the level where you can compete with the ones that are regarded as the best in the UFC? And I guess by answering that, you know, would you also be telling us that eventually the bigger fights that you have in your career, will they be at 25? Then it sounds like I don't need to ask you, oh, how about Peter Yan and Aljamain Sterling as well?
Yeah, you know, I, me and my coaches talk about it a lot, that because, you know, me and Brandon Moreno were scheduled to fight quite a few times. And, you know, as far as that fight goes, I mean, I like Brandon. You know, me and Brandon actually follow each other on Instagram. You know, he's messaged me nice things. I mean, you know, he's a great guy. He's actually a good guy. Yeah. Figueroa, whatever. I don't even know the dude. I don't really give two shits about him. But, yeah, man, I don't see any of those dudes beating me. I really don't. I really, really don't. you got to look at my resume. You got to look at their resume. And like, man, especially with my growth, like that's the biggest thing is like the growth that I've had in my career or in my skill set, I should say, you know, the amount that I've grown, you know, inside the cage, outside the cage, it's dangerous. My teammates have always said that a focused Ray Borg is a dangerous Ray Borg. And right now I'm dangerous. I'm very, very dangerous. And, you know, everyone's going to see that, on the 28th that I'm dangerous and I'm coming for what I let go and I'm coming for what I let slip away. And, you know, Aljamain and Peter Yan, you know, those are fights that, oh, for sure, you know, I'm not going to say no to any fight. And, like, let's say I just happened to get re-signed at 35. Things went well at 35, and I decided to stay at 35. Sure, you know, I think I compete with everybody. I really do. Like, I really, really do. And, but as far as where my heart is, that's the biggest thing is that's where my heart's at is when I first got into this sport, that was my goal is to be the 25-pound champ. At the time, you know, there was no 25 division in the UFC. So I thought I was going to be fighting dudes like Mamoru Yamaguchi and things like that, who were like the pioneers of the 25-pound division. That's who I set out to beat. But my goal was to be the best at 125 pounds in the entire world. And now that the stage is set to do that in the UFC, that's still my goal. And Ali's not going to believe me. No one's going to believe me, but the people are going to see that I can make 25 just fine. There was no reason why I shouldn't have made it in the first place. I always lied to myself and I lied to everybody else. I said, oh, I'm getting older. I'm getting too big. Oh, I'm getting older. The cut's getting harder. No, the problem was I was being a little fat shit and eating everything in the cabinet. And, you know, that's changed. My life's changed, you know, my life's changed a lot. And everyone's going to see that I can beat everybody that they put in front of me at 35. So that's no problem. But I can also make the weight and show that I'm the best in the world at 125 pounds.
Nice. I love hearing it, man. Well, listen, good luck with the rest of your camp. Safe weight cut to 35 and good luck versus Cody Gibson. And yeah, we would love to see the best Ray Borg, whatever weight class you decide is best for you. But I know you still got a lot of mileage left. It's a benefit that you started in sport young and you gained so much experience. And I'm glad you were able to identify what was going wrong and now fix it. And you know what? Maybe some people might ask you to step on a scale at 25 and do that trial run or whatever. But for some reason, I believe you right now, just from what you told us, just because you were so honest and why you weren't able to reach it. And that's why it was so believable to go, yeah, you know, he's going to cut out the burgers and go into that one brewery.
And the beer. I got to cut out the beer.
Yeah.
That's the one thing is I'm like, I don't like a lot of things, but I love my coffee and I love my craft beer.
Sweet. All right, bro. Thanks again for the time. It's been a great catch up. And again, our best to you and your family.
Cool. Thank you guys. Thanks you guys for having me.
Man, a lot of honesty there, huh?
Yeah, that was pretty cool, man, to hear from him and to know that he's in that place where he's kind of figured things out. I don't know if I'm that guy that says he can do 125, but boy, does he convince you and make you feel like you really can. He's shored up a lot of things, and that's kind of like one of the first times that I've ever heard somebody say hobbies got in the way. You know, having fun is actually what got in the way.
Goes, I was so scared he was going to say drugs or alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe I watched too much Breaking Bad. It's based in Albuquerque, but it really looks like a rough town where, you know, there's a lot of poverty. They call it the lower middle class and then the middle class. And it just doesn't look like there's as much upper middle class and upper class. It looks like most of it resides from middle to lower middle to just poverty. And he was open about that, you know. Cub Swanson used to tell me the story about when he would go to Albuquerque to train, every time he went to go put gas, he would get asked by other people that were putting gas, not like bums or winos or anything, but by other people that were just putting gas, and they'd say, hey, you got a buck or two? Like, I think he says, I feel like they were just seeing if I was a sucker or maybe measuring me up, you know, because they might run into me again. But he says you could tell it was, you know, pretty rough around the edges. But it, yeah, just and people at any time could ask, you got a buck or two or something like that. And he had always tripped them out. And Cub, of course, is all full of tats. He's got cauliflower ear. And he obviously gives off this vibe of someone who can protect themselves. So imagine, like, even he's getting questioned. But yeah, Ray Borg, man, he's talked about his rough upbringing before with bringing with us. And for some reason, I just thought maybe it was going to be something like that. But it was just hobbies. But those hobbies kind of linked with the weight. You know, he talked about beers and burgers, and that's something that can be corrected, and it sounds like it has. Now, you know what would be the best thing ever? Is a Dan Hooker test where he just drops the 125, steps on a scale, blows up his social media, and we all go, oh, shit. You know, but who wants to go through that? But that definitely goes a long way. Hell, that might even go so far. If he can beat Cody Gibson at Eagle FC 44, that may go so far that the promotion will go, we're willing to give this guy a second chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can agree with that. I it's going to suck, but I would definitely, that would be one way of doing that, of showing the promotion that you're serious.
I'm not saying he can't compete with the 135ers. He mentions Ricky Simone. He's fought Ricky Simone, a top 135er, not top five yet, but still he's been winning. But I really see Cruz, TJ, Sanhagen, all those are pretty big cats, man. I've been next to Ray Borg, and as tough as Ray Borg is, he's a great wrestler with great cardio, you know, and he's good all over the place. And well, I haven't even brought up Aljamain Sterling and Peter Yan. I don't think 35 is a spot in the UFC. And at Bellator, there is no flyweights. So he could maybe go there. He's actually lost to Sergio Pettis, the champ, but I feel like he could maybe catch him and beat him. But I think 25 is just going to have to be it. So maybe one of those trial runs, they call him. Just might have to do that.
Yeah, 135ers, now that I think about it, in the UFC are just way bigger than him.
We'll finish with this. UFC 270 goes, do you think, you know, you also mentioned there hasn't been as much buzz. Do you think some of it could be that $74.99 that people have to spend instead of $69.99? Like some people just say, ah, fuck it. I got the Niners and Packers, and, you know, we got football, college hoops, and I'm going to go snowboarding. You know, like, do you think some people, those $5 may have turned people off?
I believe so. I think going up against NFL is going to be rough for anyone. So, yeah, I actually don't think they're, I don't think the pay-per-view sales will be very well, very good on this one. And not to mention, like, what have we talked about? The top two fights, right? But the rest of the card, they're never bad, but this isn't on the level of what we've gotten before in the past, I think.
Yeah. In fact, they had Cannonier and Brunson, if you'll recall, and that got moved to UFC 271. So that definitely would have helped to just kind of hear and see some familiar faces. Another fighter that they had was Warley Alves, and he had to pull out of this fight. Not to say he's the biggest name, but I'm just saying those names you're familiar with. You start hearing like, oh yeah, Brunson, you know, are you going to the fights? Yeah, come on, let's go. I don't know, man. It's 200 to get in. You got the two title fight. Who else? Brunson and Cannonier. You start feeling a few more names that make you feel comfortable. Then you go, ah, fuck it. Here's 200, you know, go get the tickets. Well, Alexa Grasso was going to be on this fight with Vivian Araujo. Vivian Araujo pulled out. Usually it's Grasso. Because I don't know if you know this, I think I mentioned this before, she's pulled out of more fights than any other UFC fighter ever. So in this case, it was someone that pulled out of a fight with her. Ovalev, remember Mosvar Ovalev? He was going to fight Topuria, and Ovalev fell out. Now Topuria's fighting Charles Jourdain. So it took some hits, but they couldn't afford to take those hits. We do get two title fights. I can't argue there. But come on, man. You also spoiled us on some of the cards that you gave us in 2020 that cost us $5 less.
Yeah, I mean, if any of you guys are from the SoCal area, you'll know what I'm talking about. I could see a lot of people hanging out across the street and then crossing over about an hour into the pay-per-view or something.
That's where you even maybe put in, like, God bless them, like a Diego Sanchez. Like, that name carries something for the real casual. So, you know, that
you Jim just, Miller.
Yeah, Tito Ortiz back in the day. You just heard the name and didn't matter if he was, like, number 15th. Rank light heavyweight, you're just familiar with the name, and it just gave you this comfortability of, you know, you have $200 in your pocket, and you're like, ah, oh, these guys, they're leaving in 5 minutes. Should I go? And then you hear a couple more names. You go, here you go. Those names aren't there. You know, you got to be a hardcore to appreciate how outstanding the two title fights are going to be. But the rest is a fall. All right, folks. So let's close with this. Your last reminder for UFC 270 watch along. If you see us promoting it on social media, we would appreciate the shares, the retweets, the original posts. If you want to do them, hey, my pals over at Junkie Radio are doing this, because your friends, a lot of times you don't even know if they're fans or if their kids are fans or their neighbors are fans. And that's kind of how you grow your audience a lot of times, is the word of mouth of your listeners and readers and your fans. So that'd be great if we could, if you guys could do that for us. So look for that on our socials of at MMA Junkie George and at The Goes, and of course at MMA Junkie Radio and at MMA Junkie. That's across Twitter and Instagram. And so on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, Goes and I will be there for the watch along. John Morgan will immediately follow with a post fight show, and we do believe that we're going to have some pre fight show content as well. So be on the lookout. Thank you to Ray Borg for his time, Daniela for setting it up. And yeah, we're going to get on out of here. So enjoy the rest of the content you get leading up to UFC 270. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie. We'll see you on Saturday. Go out there and be a champion.